Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Have you struggled with the decision to leave home or stay? Today, we're kicking off a new series called The Struggle to Stay. We'll hear from young people trying to find a way to make it work here in Appalachia, like 15-year-old Cheyenne Kugel from Harlan County, Kentucky.
People don't understand how much work we put into living here. I mean, it's so hard to stay. People are leaving, and when people leave, you lose a lot of friends, a lot of family, a lot of support.
And meanwhile, what about those who want to stay but have to leave Appalachia for economic reasons? Cassidy Wright was determined to move back home to Kentucky after living several years away.
And I remember just not even noticing, like, just tears just rolling down my face, and I was just like, I'm home, because just I feel like the mountains were just like a mother to me.
On this show, we explore the struggle to stay inside Appalachia. Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Today, we're launching a new series called The Struggle to Stay. You know, Appalachia isn't alone in watching its young people fight with the decision to stay or go from their home place. It's a conversation happening all over the country. But people are leaving parts of Appalachia at a rapid pace. It's also true that some cities in Appalachia are gaining population, but rural areas, especially coal-dependent communities in southern West Virginia and eastern Kentucky, are seeing young people leave in droves. Over the next few months, we'll meet six people who are trying to decide whether to stay or leave Appalachia. Our reporters have spent the past 6 to 12 months following these people, documenting their lives and finding out what's driving them to want to stay, or in at least one case, what drove them to leave. Later in our show, we'll hear the first in this new weekly series. But first, we're going to hear from several young Appalachians working to create new opportunities in their communities. They joined us on stage at Virginia Tech at the annual Appalachian Studies Association Conference, or ASA, back in March. One of our guests on stage was West Virginia University professor Beth Nardella, who's been studying why people stay in Appalachia.
I really feel that it's an act of resistance. If the dominant trend is to leave, we have so much out-migration. I really see those of us who stay in Appalachia or who come back. I hear a lot of stories this week about people who are coming back as an act of resistance, and this is something that we're doing consciously or unconsciously to make our place better. So that's what I'm really interested in, looking at those stories.
In her research, Beth says she's been hearing one big reason why some people do feel determined to stay.
I'm really looking at a sense of place and a place-based identity. That seems to be the number one reason why people stay. And I don't think that people don't have a place-based identity elsewhere. I just think in Appalachia, in West Virginia, our ties to the mountains are very strong. And I think that's part of what keeps us here. And that's what I'm finding when I'm talking to people and in the research I've done. It's definitely linked to place.
Connection to place, to land, and to mountains. Is that why people stay when there are so many reasons to leave? Well, that's one thing we're hoping to find out in the Struggle to Stay story. We'll hear the first segment later in the show. But first, why are we even asking this question, to stay or go? Well, it's a question on so many people's minds here right now. Maybe it's something you're struggling with yourself. A report from the U.S. Census in 2015 said West Virginia was losing population faster than any other state. In 2016, we lost about 10,000 people. The mass exodus has hurt the economy, and it's tough to sustain communities on limited resources and people. For many parts of the state, it's nothing new. So basically, we wanted to put some personal stories behind these numbers. And that's why we're launching this special series and have been spending time getting to know people who are struggling with the decision to stay or leave home. After all, these mountains do take a little more effort to travel across. Now, let's hear from some other folks who joined us for the live Struggle to Stay discussion at Virginia Tech. Here's Cassidy Wright and Cheyenne Kugel, two young people who work on a project called Higher Ground. Here's Cassidy's description of her connection to the mountains and what it was like when she found a way back to eastern Kentucky.
I feel like wages in eastern Kentucky, they're just... My husband, he only makes about $8 an hour, and he's a manager at Hardee's, We struggle to pay our bills. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had my electricity cut off and had to go back and pay it whenever one of us got paid a few days later. I mean, it's such a struggle for me to make a place where I am. I was 17 years old, and my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and she lost her job due to her inability to work. She lost her home and ended up having to go live with her boyfriend's mom, and she felt like she couldn't take me there, and I ended up having to go leave my home that I had made for myself and go live in Jacksonville, North Carolina with my father. And I just remember having that piece of me ripped away and going to a place with no mountains and just the vastness of the sky with no mountains there just overwhelming me. And I just was feeling my Appalachian heritage being drained from me. And then once I graduated high school and was looking to go back and make a place for myself, I went back home. I went back to Eastern Kentucky into Harlan County and started going to college at Southeast Community and Technical College, where I work now. And it was such a amazing experience driving back up, because I'd been away for so long. I never got to come back and visit anyone. And I was driving back up, and I remember I was getting right into Virginia, right into the, northern part of North Carolina, and the mountains were starting to pop up. And I remember just not even noticing, just tears just rolling down my face. And I was just like, I'm home, because just I feel like the mountains were just like a mother to me, and they held me and comforted me whenever I didn't have that in a lot of spaces and times. And it's where I want to be, and I am taking all of the steps to be able to be a graphic designer in Harlan County. I'm going to have to move out for a little while. I'm trying to decide where I'm going to go. I've just received my associate's degree from Southeast, so I'm going to have to go on and go get my master's somewhere else, but I'm going to come back, and I'm going to make a home for my family there, and I'm going to keep being in my little comfort nest that is Eastern Kentucky and Harlan County. So, yeah, it's that's my whole spiel on that, on the whole trying to make a space. And my job, I'm a AmeriCorps Vista, which if you all know what that is, we have a living allowance, which is nothing. Sorry, government.
But you're driven. Yeah. Wasn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. So you're driven to come back,
yes,
and live in Appalachia. Why did you choose graphic design? Why does that seem like something that might be viable in the mountains?
Well, art has always meant a lot to me my whole life. My earliest memory is just sitting in my grandparents' floor with finger paints and drawing pictures of their mountains outside of their house and with the little sun, and it's just, I don't know, I've always known I've wanted to do something artistic. And through my time at Higher Ground, I started designing our posters in 2014. And I got more familiar with the programs and the software you need to do that. And I've started building a portfolio and everything. And it's really made me feel like that is something I could give back to my community. I could go back and teach other people to do what I do and be a mentor for someone and help them find a way to stay there and make money for themselves through something like graphic design that you can do for an outside company inside of Appalachia. And I think that's a real viable thing for our area.
So it sounds like something that you're really passionate about and that it brings you fulfillment and happiness, but it's also a product, right, that you can send easily. You don't have to worry about crossing the mountains and the challenges of that as long as you have good internet connection,
right? Yes,
exactly. You know, and you talked before about the how difficult it is to manage, have a full-time job, managing Hardee's with your husband, and then you're trying to, you work as a Vista volunteer on a very small stipend, so to speak. But, you know, a lot of times we hear, oh, it's so affordable, it's so cheap to live in West Virginia or in Appalachia. It's not that expensive. You giggle, Cheyenne. Tell us your thoughts about that.
Well, I mean, my mom was a single parent for a long time, and she was juggling three kids at the time. And, you know, she worked her butt off a lot to make sure we had enough to eat and enough to live off and to pay the bills. And we lived in an apartment. It was drafty, it was cold, the heat bills, the electricity bills, everything went up and the rent was just god-awful. And, you know, people say it's so easy to live in small towns, or it's easy to live in Appalachia, or it's easy to live in the mountains. People don't understand how much work we put into living here. I mean, it's so hard to stay in one spot and because there is no more jobs, and the people are leaving. And when people leave, you lose a lot of friends, a lot of family, a lot of support. And living in, you know, the mountains, it's difficult because you don't have a lot of support that you need, and you don't have as many opportunities as you can have. And, you know, she worked very hard to keep us clothed and fed, and I mean, it's just hard. And I think it's funny that people want to say that it's easy. I'd like to see them try to do it.
There you go. I like that. We're calling you out, people. You come do it. Tough Appalachian woman right there. I love it. We've been listening to a live event we recorded on stage during the 2017 ASA conference. We just heard Cheyenne Kugel and Cassidy Wright, two young people from Harlan County, Kentucky, sharing their story about the struggle to stay. Both of them help with the Higher Ground Project, a community theater group that started back in 2002 when young people in eastern Kentucky wrote a musical based on interviews from people in their local community. Their play discussed the opioid epidemic. Like Cassidy and Cheyenne, each person on our panel is part of a project that's working to create better realities for young people in the region so that people don't have to struggle as much to stay. As Cheyenne mentioned earlier, it can be difficult to pay rent, purchase land, or buy a house. And that might surprise listeners who are used to the high cost of housing in larger cities. Here's some food for thought. Finding a place to call your own isn't always easy, especially if the land isn't even for sale. According to a 2013 report by the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy, the top 25 landowners in West Virginia own about 20% of the surface in the state. And perhaps not surprisingly, most of those landowners live elsewhere. The report was the first to take a close look at land ownership since the 1970s, and it created quite a stir. To talk more about the struggle to afford housing in Appalachia, let's go back to our panel discussion. The speaker you'll hear next is Izzy Broomfield with the STAY Project, which stands for Stay Together Appalachian Youth.
I live in kind of like substandard housing, and I hope my landlord's not listening to this. I'm grateful to have a place to stay, but the rent is a little high and it's really drafty, so during the winter months, energy bills are like really bad. And I know that's not an experience that's exclusive to me or Eastern Kentucky. So I think a lot about affordable housing because I definitely believe that we are on the upswing of economic development in my community and beyond. And I'm terrified by the wave of gentrification I've seen across this country. I mean, a lot of places that people said would never gentrify have gentrified. And I keep trying to start this conversation on the ground in Eastern Kentucky, and people, you know, want the jobs and want the development so badly that they don't want to think about how when those rents start rising, even higher than they already are, that's going to be forcing out a lot of the most vulnerable people in our communities. So I will totally admit that, you know, we're a ways out from this being an urgent issue, but I'm just afraid that with the way I've seen, like, development and speculation sweep in so quickly, that if we don't start preparing for it now, things like community land trusts, rent control, things like that, then we're going to blink and suddenly we're not going to be able to afford to live where we live.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll learn a little about the admiration many Appalachians have for folks who move away. You can talk to us on Twitter at InAppalachia. You can also visit our website to learn more about our new Struggle to Stay series. That's at wvpublic.org. We'll be right back.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
And right here is a spot for another underwriter. We tend to think our listeners are the best listeners. We have thousands of them across the country, and our show airs on 11 stations across Central Appalachia. If you think you'd like to connect with our listeners by becoming an underwriter, you can reach Jane Wright with an email to feedback@wvpublic.org. And thanks. On today's show, we're talking about the struggle to stay here in Appalachia. There are limited opportunities, but as Cassidy Wright points out next in the discussion, even talented Appalachians can be dismissed or overlooked if they don't move out of the region.
I feel a lot like in people in Harlan, if you move away, no matter what you're doing, if you're still working at a fast food job, if you get out of Appalachia, people think you're doing awesome. They literally do. My friend Devin, she moved to Lexington not that long ago, and she is working at a doggy daycare, you know, and she's renting a house, and her stepmom was posting on Facebook and posted a picture of her and was like, look at my baby, all grown up with a house and a job. And I'm like, she's had a house and a job for 4 or 5 years. She just has a house and a job in Lexington, and you think she's doing this big thing now because she made it out. They think making it out is the best thing you can do.
Cassidy Wright is an AmeriCorps Vista who helps organize a community theater group in Harlan County, Kentucky called Higher Ground. Another member of Higher Ground, 15-year-old Cheyenne Kugel, agrees that her neighbors often celebrate those who leave. Perhaps it's because Appalachians aren't always accepted or greeted outside of the region. Cheyenne admits there's tension between people who want to stay and those who move to rural Appalachia from, say, a city.
I mean, it's really hard and difficult because I go to a high school and the kids there, they're like, oh, I want to stay. I want to stay. I want to be just like my father's. But here they are. And I've never left. I probably never will leave, hopefully. But they always criticize the people that come in. And they're like, oh, you're so city. You don't understand this. You don't understand this way of life. You don't get it. And here these people are coming in. Well, some of you all are scaring them out. And then some of them criticize you for leaving. But like Cassidy said, it's a big deal when you leave Harlan. It's like a celebration. It's like a baby's been born or something. You leave Harlan, you are on your way to heaven or something.
There is a song, You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In the deep, dark hills of Eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I trace my bloodline. And it's there I read on a gravestone. You will never leave Harlan alive.
Today on Inside Appalachia, we've been listening to people share their stories about their struggles to stay. The voices you've heard so far were recorded on stage during a live event we hosted in Blacksburg, Virginia, in partnership with the Appalachian Studies Association. The audience was made up mostly of ASA members with the love or desire to learn more about Appalachia. And when we opened it up for questions from the audience, Robert Guype was one of the first to raise his hand. Robert organizes the Higher Ground Project and is also the author of the illustrated novel Trampoline. He lives in eastern Kentucky.
I just wonder if y'all could talk about your schooling and how, if our schools were going to prepare, like systematically address, how do we prepare young people to stay in this place, what would our schools be like that they're not like now?
The first panelist to raise her hand to talk about education was Elissa Lowe, currently a student at Morehead State University and an alumni of the Appalachian Media Institute at Appleshop. Elissa went to high school in Carter County, Kentucky.
Well, me personally, back in Carter County, I feel like my education was pretty solid. Like, I do feel that people in maybe Lexington area, not too far from us, get better education because they have a wider range to choose from. I think, like in Carter County, you either go to East Carter or you go to West Carter. In Lexington, my mom, she recently moved there, and she had five choices to send my little brother to school. It was either going to be a public school or was it going to be like a private school, and I think that's really awesome. I feel like that'd be something beneficial to every county, just to have that option. But I feel like I got a solid education, and then going to Morehead State, I feel that we are a good school, but we struggle with money just like every other school. Like, but as soon as a crisis hit us that last semester with funding, they were immediately like, we need to cut art, we need to cut CVM, which is the communications courses. And that's just crazy to me. That's where people learn the most, is through the media. That's how we communicate nowadays. And it's just, but luckily we pulled together as a community and as a department, and we were like, no, we're going to stay, and we got signatures, and so we're staying. And I feel like we lack a lot in diversity, not only as school and a university, but as a county and a region as well. And I think opening ourselves up to diversity and, like, inviting more people and expanding our horizons and, like, sending our flyers, like, to our universities out more, would bring people in. I think one of the reasons people want to leave the region is because there isn't a lot of different things that they're not being exposed to, a lot of different things. And I think people travel to be exposed to different cultures and experience different things. And a lot of people go to universities to meet different people, different cultures, and leave with, like, networks of friends around the world. And it'd be awesome to have the benefit of an urban place having all this diversity in a rural part of the world.
Thank you, Elissa Lowe with the Appalachian Media Institute in Whitesburg, Kentucky. And back to the education question, Beth with WVU, I'm sure you had something to say about that.
Well, I have two parts,
sure,
of an answer. The first is that I think that we need to educate young people about Appalachia. And I think that's a huge problem. And I think one way that we can get young people to stay is to give them a sense of pride in their communities that contains that diversity. Appalachia is not just rural counties. It's not just Harlan County. It's Morgantown. It's Charleston. We have some really big cities here. It's Pittsburgh. There's a lot of diversity. And I think that if we continue to perpetuate the stereotypes of Appalachia as only white and backward, we're really missing out on this great pool of resources that we have. So I think that's one way to move forward, is to teach people about Appalachia beyond the black bear and the cardinal, which is all I learned in school. And I had a great education. I was very prepared for college, but I didn't learn about my state beyond the superficial.
And where are you from originally?
Clarksburg, West Virginia.
Okay.
And I loved my teachers, absolutely, but I did not learn about the mine wars. I did not learn about Buffalo Creek. I watched one film on strikes, but that was from, 150 years ago. So we didn't learn. the important stuff that would have made me want to stay.
Mm-hmm. And Cheyenne, you had something?
I mean, I get that we do need to educate ourselves in Appalachia. A lot of the adults I know don't even know what Appalachia is or how to pronounce it, which irritates me. But
we have a show about that.
Yes. We have bumper stickers for that, thank God. But my education, personally, sucks. I mean, I love my high school. I don't love the steps, but I love my high school, and some of the teachers are pretty great. I'm not ready for college. I'm not ready for anything, and a lot of the kids I know don't even plan on going to college because they don't think that they can get in or they don't think they're smart enough.
How do you know you're not prepared? What sucks about it, you think? And thank you for getting real about this at this point. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, I know my education sucks when a teacher says something and the first thing I think of is, what an idiot. or when they start praising the neo-Nazis and I'm thinking, dear God, someone shut him up. And I know my education sucks personally because I just recently took a major test that depended on whether or not I get into the classes I need to go to college. And I thought, dear God, I'm dumb. Or I saw the kids beside me saying, what in the world is this? Or afterwards, when we are all finished, they're like, they started bombarding our teachers with questions. How is this? Why are we not doing this? Why did I miss this one? I mean, my test scores came back perfect. I'm not bragging about that, but it was great. But other
and
kids.
And you go to class and all those things. You're,
yeah. Okay.
But I had a college professor tell me one time, you can't help it that you were educated in Southern West Virginia. It was a school in Southern West Virginia. so let's take some more questions. I see you had questions. Oh, and you had one. We'll get asked this one first, and then we'll get to that one as well. Can you say your first and last name and where you're from?
Sure. My name is John Conley. I grew up in Buchanan, West Virginia, but I live outside the region now. And there's a lot of connections that I would love to have the chance to make, thanks to everyone on the panel. I'll just choose to make one connection that really that I found to be really moving and very striking. I want to start with something that Beth said right at the outset of making this argument that staying or coming back to Appalachia is an act of resistance. And I really like that. And that helps me think about my own experience a lot. And it helps me understand and think about what a lot of folks are doing around the region these days. And I want to connect that with something that Cassidy said a while back about how she decided she really wanted to stick around because of the project of Higher Ground. And I'm a big believer that resistance needs projects. And the way that resistance works and the way that resistance builds is through projects. And there's been a lot, you know, we're talking a lot about the, you know, folks wanting to stay because of place. And I think that that's really, really important. But I wonder if we could add to place this language of projects. Or, and this is my question, I guess. I'm interested if you all think it would be useful to try out the language of infrastructure. Because that's what I see. I kind of want to name what we're all talking about here, and I want to call it infrastructure. I see the work of folks like yourselves as really building infrastructure in Appalachia. And the story has always gone that infrastructure comes from somewhere else, and projects come from somewhere else to Appalachia. And, you know, like you pointed out, Jessica, in a lot of places in our region, you know, things like land are owned by people outside the state and multinational corporations outside the state. But they can't own the projects, you know, and they can't own the infrastructure that you all are doing. And so I guess I just would like to invite you all to talk a little bit about how, like, place and projects and infrastructures, like, as a language can kind of, might work to expand like what we're thinking about and what we're trying to do. Thanks for letting me ask a really long question.
One of the panelists who answered this question was Dave Walker. He works with Beginning Farmers at Blue Ridge Women in Agriculture in Boone, North Carolina. The program helps women and their families obtain the skills related to sustainable food and agriculture.
So from within the lens of like the local food system that I work, we lost how to know how to cook food and how to grow food, and it's become something that we don't know how to do anymore. And so what we do with Blue Ridge Women in Agriculture is we try to teach folks to teach other folks how to grow food and how to eat food and how to encourage other people to do that. And that came about because a group of female growers in the early 2000s, they really wanted to learn how to start a sustainable food system in our area. And they go to the extension officer, and they'd kind of be like, no, women can't be farmers. And then they'd go to the loan officer, and they'd get laughed at. And so they said, well, we'll just do it ourselves. And so they started having potlucks on each other's farms and talking to each other about how do you grow food, how do you sell food to market. And they do it a lot differently than the larger commodity growers or the tobacco growers or the Christmas tree growers. You know, they're interested in feeding their community. And so they really relied on each other to teach each other how to grow food. And I see that as kind of what we're doing on a larger landscape with how to form a new community. And so reimagining what we want to see and creating that infrastructure ourselves.
And that was Dave Walker from Boone, North Carolina. And it's also things, you know, growing your own food. I love this. It makes sense. We've got obesity issues and health issues as well. So, you know, learning how to grow your own food and eat vegetables and healthier foods is also important. I love that idea. Izzy, you look like you're itching to talk.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we'll get to another question in the audience. Go ahead, Izzy.
Super great question. Thank you very much for asking it. Place, projects, and infrastructure. I think it's not only kind of like networks and more of kind of like the brain trust aspect of infrastructure, as well as the literal like water lines and broadband infrastructure. I think we're in the process of building both here. And I think it's important to recognize that, yeah, we can build broadband infrastructure, and yeah, we can own broadband infrastructure. And that's actually a thing that we're working on where I live in Letcher County in eastern Kentucky. We have formed a broadband board, which is a part of the county government, and we are in negotiations with a couple of the telecom companies in the area who kind of act as like middle businesses and overcharge us for services that if we were doing ourselves as a municipality, a municipal ISP, we could offer to people in the county a lot more affordably. So we as a board have realized that whoever, you can pretty much only have one broadband network in eastern Kentucky. It's not that huge of a, well, in our county, it's not that huge of a place. And we realize that whoever controls that network will control the economic future of our county. So if we allow these companies to build it at their rate, which is they don't really have a timetable, they're going to continue to charge us the ridiculous prices for the terrible service. So we're trying very hard to own that infrastructure. And I think it's important to say, like, yes, this is a thing that other communities need to look into. And other communities are looking into it. But the other side is super important as well. And the Stay Together Appalachian Youth Project is a project that's building infrastructure of a very different kind. You know, we're not looking to own a fiber broadband network. But one thing that we have created is a network of peer mentorship and skill shares across Central Appalachia that didn't exist before. And I really quickly want to lift up Alandria Williams, who was one of the most brilliant and powerful leaders in Appalachia, who was one of the founding members of STAY, which was founded about 10 years ago at an App Studies conference when young people were being talked about at a session rather than being invited in like we are now to talk about what we are doing and what we can do. So people left and said, hey, these people aren't doing it for us. We need to do it for ourselves. And that's another form of infrastructure that, you know, does exist and is making material changes in the region.
The last speaker we heard was Izzy Broomfield with the STAY Project. We also heard from Dave Walker, who lives in Boone, North Carolina. Thanks to all of our panelists who joined us on stage at the 2017 Appalachian Studies Conference at Virginia Tech. To help kick off our Struggle to Stay series, we've posted a video on our website about what young people in Appalachian Kentucky are doing to stay. It was produced by the Appalachian Media Institute, and one of our panelists, Elissa Lowe, helped. You can watch it at wvpublic.org. When we come back, we'll hear about our new series called The Struggle to Stay, and we'll meet 20-year-old Colt Brogan, who says he's going to find a way to stay in West Virginia, even though he knows it won't be easy. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Here in Appalachia, thousands of people are leaving each year, moving from their hometowns to find opportunities elsewhere. It's not hard to find comments on social media simplifying the character of Appalachians with remarks like, "Why don't they just move?" or "You get what you vote for." In this series, we'll get to know Appalachians and dig into their connections to this area and struggles that often drive them away. As people in the region watch their friends and neighbors move to the country's south and west, some want to join them but can't afford to or feel obligated to stay. Others are compelled to remain in Appalachia with dreams of turning their region into one that's economically and culturally vibrant and, perhaps more importantly, proving its value to the country as a whole. The feelings young people have about Appalachia, they're complicated. That's why West Virginia Public Broadcasting, WMMT, the Ohio Valley Resource, and the Allegheny Front have decided to explore those feelings, following six young people for about 6 months to see whether they stay in Appalachia or pick up their roots and look for a new life. Our producer, Roxy Todd, joined Beth Voorhees on our local morning news show, West Virginia Morning, to talk about our new series called The Struggle to Stay.
I take it from the title. The struggle to stay means that this is a story about people who either don't want to live here because it's too much of a struggle to stay here, or they want to move away. Is that what does the struggle to stay, just the title, trying to convey?
Most of the people we've been following are determined to stay, but they also admit it's really difficult. At least one person has decided to leave, decided he's fed up with it, and his story's more about the struggle of finding a place outside of West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So it's both. It's about the struggle to leave and what that means, and also just trying to find a place here in West Virginia and trying to feel settled, which is difficult for all the people that we've been talking to.
Where did this idea come from? What was the spark that started this?
Well, back in 2015, West Virginia Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Living partnered on this social media campaign to try to get people to talk about the struggle to stay and whether they want to leave West Virginia and why they want to leave and if they have left. And then in 2016, we were chosen by NPR to come to NPR headquarters and kind of workshop this long-term storytelling project that followed people over a 6 to 12 month period. So Glynis Board and I went up to NPR. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. And we got to meet with a lot of other teams and sort of brainstorm this idea with NPR reporters and producers. So it was a long time in the making. We brainstormed it a lot and decided that what we really wanted to do as reporters is stick with people over a long period of time, because we often interview somebody and then we don't see them again. So this idea that we'd interview them every month, return to them, get to know them, the story would become deeper and deeper over time, that really seemed appealing to us. So That's how it all started.
Mm-hmm. What stands out to you the most as you were the producer of this series? Is there a story or a person that you can share with us?
Well, the person I've been following as a reporter is Colt Brogan. His story is the one that we'll hear first in this series, and he's very determined to stay, but he's also dealing with a lot of stuff with his family. there's parents in the series. One of the women that I've been following is a single mom. She's in her 30s, and she's struggling just to spend time with her family while she's going to school and doing a full-time job. So she's balancing a lot. And I think the struggle, it is affecting a lot of young people, but it's also affecting people from all different age groups. Mm-hmm. So
I know, and I can say this from personal experience. I talk to people in my age group, you know, people who are facing retirement, you know, people who are coming to the end of their careers. And I would ask them, do you struggle to stay or do you want to go? And it was always where their kids or their grandkids were. It really wasn't an issue of, well, I want to leave West Virginia. It was more of an issue, well, my grandchild's in North Carolina. I really want to move to North Carolina. So it was different for my age group than it was for someone who was younger. It depended on where the kids and the grandkids were. What should we as listeners to this series, The Struggle to Stay, what should we listen for or what should we take away?
I think what's really interesting to me as I've been listening to the stories that I've been doing and kind of listening to hours and hours of tape is that once you know somebody for a long period of time like this, it's really hard to boil them down into one story or two stories. And like all of us, these people are complex. They have really deep and complicated lives. But there's something that connects all of them in that they are very strong-willed and hopeful, actually. Even the person that's left, he has a lot of hope for his future and, you know, for the people that he's connected to. I think also something that connects these people is the sense that home isn't just a house. Home isn't just a neighborhood. It's also the people you're connected to. And so we all move around. We all change who we hang out with. But home is really connected to our community and the people we see on day to day. And in some cases, it's also the people we've left behind, but we're still connected to in some part of ourselves. And I think that's what connects everybody. And I think we're all searching for that sense of home. Even if we're in the same place we grew up, a lot of us have been moving around. And a lot of us have this sense that we're unsettled and restless. And I think that connects a lot of the people that we've been interviewing for this project.
Do you expect to hear from other people after they hear the stories of the people that you have profiled and their struggle to stay? Do you expect to hear the stories of other folks who are kind of facing the same situation and the same decisions?
Yeah, I think we hope that this will generate a conversation and continue the social media conversation, and we're going to keep the Tumblr going that we started in 2015 with West Virginia Living and see if people submit more stories about their struggle to stay or leave West Virginia.
Roxy Todd would look forward to this series, The Struggle to Stay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
The struggle is different for each of us. While academic studies might provide a generalized view, the complexities are found in the individual journey for each of us as we try to find a place where we belong. So, as you just heard, we've been following Colt for the past year and collecting interviews, and today we'll hear the first part of his story in segment one of The Struggle to Stay. In high school, Colt planned on joining the Army, or maybe working for a construction company, anything except working in the coal mines. A lot of families in his community have worked as miners. Colt saw many miners lose their jobs when he was in high school, including his stepfather. Despite the economic challenges, he wants to stay in West Virginia to be close to his family, especially his 7-year-old brother, River. It's been a struggle for Colt to find a way to stay in West Virginia. Then, a few months before he graduated high school, an opportunity came his way, a chance to work in his home of Lincoln County. And that's what he wants. But at the same time, he told our producer, Roxy Todd, that home isn't perfect.
I guess I'll start with my family. My intermediate family, my mom and my mom, has always lived down this road since I was about, I want to say, 3 or 4.
Colt Brogan drives me along the Coal River in a 1996 Geo Tracker. That rattling you hear? There's something wrong with his car, he mutters, but he doesn't have the time or money to get it fixed.
This is an extremely windy road. People describe it as like a roller coaster.
It's May 2016, one of our first interviews together. Every curve of this road has some significance for Colt. As we travel along the river, I learn all the stories that connect him to Lincoln County, all the things he loves and hates, and all the memories that make him feel he has to stay, even though a part of him wants to leave. As a kid, he walked miles down this road. During summers, he spent more time outside than at home. On the hills to our left, we pass nice brick houses with big, well-landscaped lawns. Those houses, says Colt, are where the rich people live. The other side, the one that floods almost every spring, is where the river people live.
And my people are the people of the Coal River. That's the people that I relate to. Those are the people that is the only one that live the life that I lived.
He doesn't live here anymore, along the Coal River. Now he rents a small two-bedroom house in Hamlin, the county seat. But his real home will always be along this river.
This is the Coal River. So the Big Coal and the Little Coal, is actually the name of them, rivers, they merge towards the water plant, actually, towards right about there.
The ripples in the water make a V at this point, where the two rivers join. You can actually walk across the water here because it's so shallow.
And that was always my favorite part of the river, because it's just like when the two rivers meet, it's a big sand barge, and it's like super shallow and super sandy, and there's like...
So good swimming hole?
No, because it was shallow, but it was fun, I guess. You know, you got to get out and you drag your boat, you know, across the shallows. And I don't know, I just always liked it, and it was so sandy at the bottom, you know, it wasn't rough, and there wasn't a lot of trash that you could see.
Where Colt is pointing, there's a garbage bag and some empty plastic bottles on the bank of the water.
But it's really beautiful back there. I've done some walking back there. There's a 30-foot waterfall back behind there, if you go back enough.
At one point along the drive, Colt points out one of his favorite spots along the river, or was when he was a kid.
This is where everybody fishes. Mainly because it's deep and there's good access to the river and nobody's there. And that cross you've seen, that actually somebody was murdered there a couple years ago. Yeah. Came to a gruesome demise, probably drug related, to be honest.
We drive a little more through washed out parts of the road until we park at one of Colt's favorite swimming holes. A giant oak tree hangs over us as we stand on a narrow beach beside the Green River. Two kayakers paddle by.
Pretty good. Good, thank you. Oh, yeah.
Colt says everything changed in this community about 10 years ago when drugs like prescription pills and then meth and heroin started becoming more common.
On a normal day, on a completely normal day here, there's somebody in their car up there doing some drugs. There's like three people rolling a joint or a blunt down here. It's a normal day.
Colt remembers parties on the weekend here when he was in high school. But he also remembers when families would come here to swim together, something he hasn't seen in years.
You know, it used to be more beach, so there'd be more people basking in the sun, and the kids could play in the rapids that there used to be, and the rope swing was really deep, so it was pretty safe, honestly. And you can still go on the rope swing, but it's not as deep as it used to be where they made the breaks. This rope swing, so many people have gotten hurt because they put a rock shelf there. And if you don't swing out just enough, you'll hurt yourself. And this tree that there's a rope swing, believe it or not, I've actually seen people climb to the top of it and jump out into the water. There's this one guy who's notorious for doing it. He's done it over 30, 40 times. Just climb to the top of that tree and jump from a 30, 40-foot drop.
We stand beside the river and talk for maybe 20 minutes. I get the sense that Colt is basically a normal teenager. He grew up in a place just like lots of places that have changed.
And it's almost scary to see that change, to see what I feel is the drug epidemic changing the nature of the people to what they are today. how it used to just not be like that. You know, the worst thing you'd ever hear about is maybe marijuana and some drinking. And now it's like your cousin Tommy's a meth head and your brother lives up Cliffside and is in a heroin den or something.
After we get back into his geotracker, we drive past small homes, dog kennels, and chicken coops. Colt doesn't slow down as we pass his mom's house. He keeps his eyes on the road.
This is where I grew up. There used to be a trailer there, but we tore it down because of flood damage, and that's my mother's house. But I'm not welcome there anymore.
Colt and his mom haven't been getting along for years, but things came to a head when he stopped by her house for a visit a few days before this interview. They got into an explosive argument over money, he says. She wanted him to pay the taxes on a property she'd given him next door. He said he didn't want the property. It floods all the time. For years, Colt says his mom has repeatedly tried to get money from him. This time, he told her no.
My mom told me to leave. And she said, are you going to pay the taxes? And I said, well, I was probably not going to. And she got upset and started yelling and cussing and breaking stuff and asked me to leave.
Colt tells me his mom has struggled with drug addiction since he was a little kid. Later, I ask his mom if this is true. She says addiction is something from her past. It's how she dealt with abuse she's experienced from men in her life. As for this fight over money, she says she was angry that Colt wouldn't help pay the taxes, but that she didn't throw him out of the house. Colt moved out of his mom's house 2 years ago, just 4 days before his 18th birthday. He doesn't look sad when he talks about it. He's angry.
But there's nothing for me at that house. It's nothing but bad memories anyway, mainly.
We turn around, and this time he does slow down as we pass his mom's house again. There's a nativity scene, surrounded by blooming flowers.
Despite everything, she always had a green thumb, and I think that's somewhat where I got my green thumb. It's from my mother. Like, anything she would plant, she's planted a little bit of everything. Flowers and crops and stuff like that. And everything I've ever seen her plant has grown with almost no maintenance. It's strange.
That green thumb that Colt inherited from his mom, he says it's what's keeping him here in West Virginia, because he's in a training program that's teaching him agriculture and helping him go to college. But will farming pay the bills after his 2 years in the program are up? And in the meantime, how is he going to juggle a full-time job, school, and the stress of his turbulent relationship with his mother? Because things do change between them over the next year. Well, kind of. More on that next time. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd in Lincoln County, West Virginia.
We'll experience more of Colt's journey next week here on Inside Appalachia. On our website, wvpublic.org, you can see photos of Colt and learn more about all of the six people we'll be following for the Struggle to Stay series. I was always told to get out of here because that was the only way to make something of myself. I dreamed of moving to New York City or any city that really had tall buildings. The network of broadcasters was my ticket out of here, until I started to really dig into the issues here and find more stories of resilient people who refuse to complain about what they do have. Why aren't Appalachians allowed to demand better? This mentality of just accepting your reality, keeping your head down, your mouth shut, and being thankful is frustrating. We've been proud of surviving for as long as I can remember. When will we finally start thriving here in Appalachia? We want to hear from you. Tell us about your struggle to stay or leave Appalachia. You can send us a tweet at @InAppalachia or send us an email at feedback@wvpublic.org. What do you think? Can you gain respect and legitimacy if you stay here in Appalachia? Have you left and felt rejected or even discriminated against because of your Appalachian heritage? Or why do you stay in Appalachia? Till next week, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia.
Music in today's show was provided by Marisa Anderson and Daryl Scott. Jesse Wright is our executive producer. He also helped to edit our show this week. Patrick Stevens is our audio mixer. Roxy Todd helped produce. And a special shout out to Nathan Thomas, who helped us by recording our panel at the Appalachian Studies Conference. Thanks, Nathan, for jumping in to help us at the last minute. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org or find us on Twitter @InAppalachia. You can also address your letters to Inside Appalachia in care of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Downcast, and at wvpublic.org. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a news and public affairs production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.